All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast, MWWire.com, where you can find us, Matt, you know, write about expansion, write about previews, write about the other Mountain West football things. But we're talking your favorite team, Fresno State Bulldogs, in our penultimate team preview. See, I used a smart word there before we talk about Nevada next show.
Nicely done.
I was trying to think, is that the right way to say it? I'm like, yes, that is. Because it's always on TV before the season finale. It's always, we have to.
Yeah, don't worry. I would have corrected you.
Yeah, I know. No, definitely do. I knew what it was, but it's something you never say out loud too often. You hear it typically.
Yeah, yeah.
Such one of those words, I'm like, I think that's correct. So, excellent. But football it is. Fresno State, MWR.com, MWCR on Twitter, where we've gained quite a few followers the past couple weeks. So appreciate everyone who decided to find articles you wrote written about. And Oregon State fans, you're welcome. Washington State fans, come on over and see what you're missing with our stuff. That's a distinct possibility sooner than later. So we're talking about your Bulldogs, Matt. Fresno State. So we are at a point in their history where Jeff Tedford's back for the second time around. He's been kicking around. They've done quite well with the offense past couple of years. What stands out from last year? Should we kind of always look at last year's team for like a few minutes beginning? What was any like standout that would correlate to this year from last year?
Well, I mean, in a sense, the more things change, the more they stay the same, you know? It wasn't quite the same kind of turnaround that he had engineered back in 2017 when he took a one-win team to 10 wins and very nearly won a conference title. But it was still pretty impressive, you know, considering that, you know, September had all kinds of emotions attached to it, you know, losing the last second heartbreaker against Oregon State, and then subsequently losing Jake Haener for a time to injury on the road against USC. It took a little time for the team to find its footing, and for a couple of weeks, it looked like they were on really shaky ground, you know, especially
UConn. You could say it. It's okay.
I didn't want to come out and explicitly say it, but yes, losing on the road at UConn was not a particularly good look. But then they found themselves. And when Jake Haener got healthy, the team really took it to another level. And it wasn't without a little bit of good fortune, you know, where they lost a heartbreaker against Oregon State. They also later rallied to win a shocker against San Diego State. In particular, they also had one score wins, you know, where they had to outlast both San Jose State and UNLV to get back to the title game. But then once they were there, they had a pretty convincing win on the road against Boise State and did the same in the LA Bowl against Washington State. So you look forward to 2023 and it's one chapter has definitely closed. Haener is gone. Guys like Jalen Murray and O'Cropper are gone. David Perales is gone. And another chapter opens. You know, now the question becomes, you know, how well can the offense regroup and maintain what was a pretty high level of performance last year? You know, when you look at what the team was able to accomplish, I believe they were second overall among Mountain West teams by the end of last year in overall SP plus. They were right behind Air Force, 58th overall. And in terms of like net points per drive, they were also well above average. They were 24th overall. In terms of available yards percentage, net per drive, that they were 21st. So like they set a very high bar, and it's going to be up to a number of new faces on both sides of the ball to maintain it. But I think at this point, you know, if you're like me, you know better than to bet too heavily against Jeff Tedford and company.
Oh yeah. His first year turnout was legit one of the best ever in college football. Not just saying that, but him, like I said, being a terrible team. McMarion came in.
Mm-hmm.
Took a minute. Morgan State won a conference or went to conference title game. Did all those type of things, doing extremely well. The big thing, we'll get to it, but he's an offensive guy. Like when he's at Cal, so like Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch, those type of guys, like running backs, Justin Fields, wasn't he a guy too? He had there at Cal. So we know what we're getting offense. So replacing running backs, quarterbacks, top receivers, even with that, they're still projected to be a pretty good team this year because it's kind of like, oh, we've seen it before, and he'll a good chance he could do it again. And so that's why I think what we'll see. It's like he's a known commodity, obviously. Second time around, usually second time around coaches don't, we're not, they're not good. Like John Robertson at USC, or trying to think of some others, but there's a few others that they come around. It's like, ah, they don't do as well round number two when they come back to the same school. And so,
well, and it's not just him though. And I think, you know, based off of the two stints that he's had with the Bulldogs, it's just as important to remember the caliber of coaches that he's brought in during that time as well. Obviously, the big name, Kalen DeBoer, now the head coach at Washington. You know, then he elevated Kirby Moore to the job. Kirby Moore is now the offensive coordinator at Mizzou. And one of the questions that we got for this podcast on Twitter was what our thoughts were on Pat McCann. So before I give mine, I was curious if you had any thoughts on Fresno State's new offensive coordinator in particular.
I trust what Jeff Tedford does. You know what I mean? Like, what's the, like, he wouldn't bring up a coach who's like, who hasn't been worth it. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to bring in somebody who's, oh, this guy's just, he's, it's not Tedford like a puppet guy. He's going to bring in who he wants to come in. He who knows and comfortable and confident in what the offense is. Because I think Tedford gives a lot of trust to these guys he comes in. So I think he can do his own thing. Tedford's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good example of what it's like. But there's some coaches who are like, think of a super uber defensive coach or uber offensive coach. That's what Tedford is. Where it's like, I don't want anything to do with you. I trust you. Tedford has hidden everything, but he's going to trust this guy. And I don't think he'll overstep for what he wants, what they're going to do. You know what I mean? Like when they come in to, when Tedford gets his guys, like, I know what you're doing. His track record is impeccable for what he's doing. Cause he with, I'm trying to pull some up here at the same time, but I trust him for what he comes in. Like he did stuff. Was UC Davis recently? Who's a pretty good team. He's a coach where, if you think about what Fresno State can do and what they've done, and Tedford, like him being receivers coach last year, like what was he, the passing game coordinator last year too? Is that correct?
Yes.
The offense is pretty good, right? They pass the ball quite well. You know what I mean? And so promoting a guy from within who is a Tedford guy, wants it for passing the ball, and all Brando Cropper when he had like Keyshawn Johnson years ago when Tedford was there. I have zero issues with what he can do. And it's just only concern, if there's any, it's like, okay, has he called plays? Is he knowing how to run an offense at this type of level? But besides that, the way he spread the ball around, all these different receivers getting involved with Remigio, Nick, and Remitz and Moreno Copper, I think they'll be fine. They're multiple all-conference receivers. Was it, looking around here, each of the last 2 years, they've had all-conference receivers. So I'm like, there's no concern with Tedford, like, we don't need to go out and get some other buddy or some other guy who's been an OC somewhere else. I'm going to bring a guy in who's familiar with the program and everything. And again, Eastern Washington as well. They're pretty good. The red blood field, they score points. So there's that.
Okay, so to drive that last point home, I'll start by saying that I love the fact that they elevated him to this position because of what he did with the Eagles in particular. He was interim OC for a time with Eastern Washington back in 2021, but he did his best work, in Cheney over those 3 years, and the one thing that stands out to me, you may recall that Eastern Washington upset UNLV in non-conference play back in 2021. And a big reason for that was their quarterback that year, Eric Berrier, who, if you don't remember the name off the top of your head, he was an All-American. He won the Walter Payton Award that year. He was the Big Sky Offensive Player of the Year that year. And, oh, by the way, Eastern Washington averaged 44 points a game and led the entire FCS in total offense.
It was like 550 a game or something like that. Something ridiculous.
Yeah, and obviously, like, it's expecting that level of performance at Fresno State might be asking a bit too much. But that's the kind of track record that I think that you, as a Bulldogs fan, if you're a Bulldogs fan, you can get excited about it. Even if we're going to start sort of looking at the different positions, even if replacing Jake Tainer is going to be one of the more difficult things that any coach is going to have to do in the Mountain West this year.
Yeah, them losing him, top running back, top receivers. So let's start there. They have Hayner's gone with the Saints, and he's there hanging out with Derek Carr. So a couple of Fresno guys, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to be the quarterback? Because during fall camp, which is going on right now, you have it's probably, it's going to down to Logan Fife, who played a bit last year. Like, not great because I lost to UConn. They have Mikey Keene from UC Central Florida. And but they're in camp right now. We're UCF. Sorry, should I say Central Florida? They get mad at me, or should I say UCF? What's the?
They will get mad at you. So yes, you should do that.
So I should call it Central Florida. Okay, Keene from Central Florida. According to camp, like our buddy Jack Zamora talks about, Fife has really improved during fall camp. I think they started padded practices this week after a couple, actually just getting shells and everything. They're fairly similar from what I've read and what they've seen. But we've seen, I think they'll be fine with whomever. I don't. Who do you lean toward? Is it Keene just because he played at a higher level and a bit, not higher level, but played more at a better level than Fife, who's kind of seen times here and there on an injury basis with a Jay Kaner going out last year?
So, you know, on paper, it would seem that Keene would be the more obvious choice, if only because relative to the other transfers that Tedford has brought in over the past handful of years, you mentioned Marcus McMarion earlier, and obviously Jay Kaner. Keene comes into this competition with more previous success as a starting quarterback at the FBS level than either of those two guys did. He was 8-3 as a starter at UCF. He has a career completion percentage, you know, just above 65%, 65.6 altogether, 6.7 career yards per attempt. And if you look at Pro Football Focus, you'll notice that like his big time throw rate last year was 7.1%. That would have been the second best rate of any quarterback in the Mountain West. So he does know how to push the ball down a field a little bit. And he is on the current roster listed at 5'11", 198. So he is very Jake Haner-like in that regard. But, you know, Fife, if you look a little bit closer at the numbers, and if you sort of remember the fact that he was stepping into an extremely difficult situation, arguably the best quarterback in the Mountain West last year. Yeah, the first two games did not look particularly good. But once he got his feet under him, he was pretty solid in the two games that he did end up winning before handing the QB1 role back to Haner. Against San Jose State in New Mexico, completed over 70% of his throws, 7.6 yards per attempt. I think the one big thing that we still don't know is whether he can push the ball down the field as effectively as Haner did, or as effectively as Keene has proven that he could be. Because his average depth of target was only 6.8 yards per attempt. And he only had a big time throw rate of 2.3%. So I think that he perhaps among the two still has a little bit more to prove. But I do think that if he does win the job out of fall camp, I think he showed enough as his tenure improved last year that he probably deserves at least a relatively long leash, you know, through which to sort of cement himself into that job, especially since the non-conference schedule, it's rigorous, but it's not overly rigorous, at least in my opinion. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah, well, they open up at Purdue, which is a fine Big Ten team, but it's a road game. It's just somebody from Big Ten who's a decent Big Ten team. So, yeah, we'll get to that later, how that will feel. But there's no easing into it. It's like maybe play both guys for half or something.
Well, if the decision were yours, who would you choose?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We see people might say, oh, I want the upside, or I want the guy, the mystery backup quarterback who's always the favorite person around town. And Keen did come in for Dylan Gabriel at UCF and played quite well. I've seen him lose to UConn, which is not a great look. And so it's like, what am I basing off of that? And Keen's had the full offseason conditioning program. I might lean toward Keen, but whoever's going to start is going to have to figure things out quick with new running back and new group of receivers. But I think maybe Keen, but just by a little bit.
I think that I would agree. But if it does end up being Fife, like I said, I think that we would give him the benefit of the doubt just based on the coaching staff around him and based in part on the talent around him as well.
Yeah. So I think they'll be fine whomever, but I think Keen's upside and more, like we mentioned, chucking the ball, playmaking downfield. I think I'd lean toward him, but either way, either quarterback, I wouldn't really have a big concern, but that's just my lean. And the right now they're in camp, like they're pretty even. That's what guys are reporting out there. So what about running back? Because they replaced 2 years in a row, Ronnie Rivers, Jordan Mims is gone. And what we do know what they want at running back is basically a guy who can a versatile person, like running, like with we go back to Rivers. Mims was kind of similar, not quite as good, but still good. Catching the ball in the backfield, running the ball well. Rivers was a return guy. Did Mims return kicks? I forget. Was he a part-time return guy?
Here and there,
a little bit. Yeah, so kind of a little bit. So they want their running backs to be guys who can make plays. And so Mims was quite good, but maybe I fell into this a little bit as well with Rivers. Like, oh, Rivers is really good. But Mims is like a guy where he's going to be missed. He had, 18 TDs, 1,300 yards. Like, is it going to be Malik Sherrod, who had under 500 yards and a couple touchdowns last year? They have, like, Elijah Gilliam is a bigger guy back there, or maybe even Damian Moore from Cal. So it's going to be probably some sort of rotation. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think, and another of the questions that we got was what kind of workload we envision for someone like Sherrod. Like, is he going to be an every down back? You know, he is, I think, you know, I forget exactly what Ronnie Rivers' measurements were, but Sherrod is only listed at 5'8" and 173 pounds. So I think, if anything, his workload, I mean, it might be very Ronnie Rivers-like in the sense that they want to get him the ball, but not necessarily by punching him between the tackles 20 times a game. Like, if you look at Rivers' overall workload, you know, especially when he was at his, you know, healthiest back in like 2018, 2019, he was never averaging more than like 12 or 14 carries per game. The trick is that, you know, at that same time, he also had 43 receptions in 2019 and 26 in 2018. So he was very active in that element of the game as well. So I think if Sherrod had a workload like that, where maybe he was carrying the ball 12 times a game, but he also caught like two or three balls as well, that would not surprise me, especially since it seems like the coaching staff has a lot of confidence in the guys behind him, because they also bring back Elijah Gilliam, who, you know, small sample size, only 17 carries, but he did manage 5.9 yards per carry. Plus, they also bring in Damian Moore from Cal, who, you know, again, relatively small sample size, career 160 carries, but he has also averaged 5 yards a carry, 6 total touchdowns. And they also have, you know, some youngsters who could feasibly step in and pick up a handful of carries here and there. Guys like Ryan Workington, Jonathan Arsenault, and, as it happens, another Rivers. Devin Rivers, Ronnie's younger brother, now in the program. He's a true freshman. So who knows? But I think they have enough options that they feel good about that they don't necessarily need Sherrod to be like the dude with capital T, capital D, if that makes sense.
Because even, yeah, you're right. Because even when they had Rivers and Mims, it was still mostly Rivers, but Mims got a good enough run where they put two backs out there and they could both do things.
Yeah.
So that's something we could see as well. But it's going to be, at least early on, I have a hard time thinking it'll be this one guy from day one versus Purdue versus Eastern Washington versus Arizona State. I just don't think it'll be one guy. I think it'll be a couple guys out there doing their thing. And again, we trust in Tedford, and there'll be some drop off like there was from Rivers to Mims a little bit, but not a ton. It'll just take a guy get 1,000 yards rushing, which I think is probably a good goal to get. Maybe close to 1,000, because there's only seven players last year, six players who got 1,000 yards in the Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
And so 1,000 yards would be quite good. But I think maybe it's a bit ambitious, but would 800 be okay? Would that be reasonable for your starting back for Fresno State? That puts you top 12 in the conference, basically, from last year. Top 11, actually.
Yeah, I would take that.
I think in this offense, that's a realistic goal for a starting running back. Because you look at this past year of 1,300 yards, you look at Ronnie Rivers the year before, he had – actually, only 788, but he was caught the ball. But also, when they had Mims hit them, those two combined for 1,500. So I think if your main guy gets about 800, like Rivers is last year, which looks underwhelming compared to what Mims did, which is wild, 788 for 5 TDs, and Mims had 1,300 yards last year. He was wild. It's like, arguably, I know how much run we gave Rod Roberts. He's that good. Jordan Mims was right neck and neck with him. He just didn't run like fewer carries, but he's still 400 yards behind about, but his neck and neck for more hit, more touchdowns, better yards per play. So he was legit one of the best running back, top two in the conference, obviously. So that's a big hole to replace. But I trust it. I don't think there'll be that much. I think there'll be more of a 2021 than 2022 for the top running back. And that'd still be quite good.
And, you know, we've talked about, you know, replacing quarterback, replacing running back. But honestly, replacing so many wide receivers is probably the biggest mystery on this offense, because, you know, I mentioned Jalen Moreno-Cropper. He's gone, but so is Nico Remigio and Zane Pope and Mims and tight end Raymond Pauls Jr. Yeah. Josh Kelly is at Washington State now. So you're talking about, you know, a number of guys like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like a half dozen by my count, plus maybe one or two more, who had at least 10 targets for this team last year that are now gone. And so beyond Eric Brooks, who should have, you know, I would imagine have the slot position down pat, very clearly team's leading receiver, 37 catches, 391 yards, and 3 touchdowns last year. Who's going to step up next to him? That's sort of an open question. And the story behind this particular unit, I think, is that there are a lot of very interesting options. It's just a matter of trying to identify who else is going to, you know, I think primarily who's going to start outside. And then of that group, like which one is likely to be like the next Moreno-Cropper type.
Yeah, there's a lot of young guys, a couple of freshmen, like reading what just because camp's underway and reading what people are going, like everybody, Jackson Morgan, like he's talking about how redshirt freshman Jalen Moss was getting first team reps in front of Freeman there. So you have that.
And as a reminder, he was our staff's pick as the Mountain West preseason freshman of the year.
Jalen Moss was?
He was.
See, look at that. And then also you have like Nathan Acevedo, small, he could be the outside guy, 5'10", 170, but it's going to be a lot of redshirt freshman young guys who come out to step up. So maybe it is Jalen there and he has a big year. It's just hard to, like, I'm looking at my win-loss record. I'm surprised what I ended up with because of how much to replace. Like, this is legit brand new offense. Like, they're losing, like, I should look it up real quick. Bill C's like returning production. He had to be one of the worst in the country in offense.
It's important to keep in mind that, like, yeah, they are losing a lot of guys, but it's not like the cupboard is totally bare. I mean, because one, they've been fairly adept at utilizing the transfer portal to fill holes here and there on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
But I, you know, at the same time, you know, they do have a few old hands that are back for 2023. So like, you know, Mac Delaina, Eric Brooks, like I mentioned earlier, Emory Edwards, longtime veteran, all three of those guys are back. All three guys know the system. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, you know, they brought in so many new transfers in addition to the young guys, like you mentioned, Moss is one of them. But they have like this JUCO trio of Artis Cole, who averaged 14 and a half yards per catch at Glendale City College. You know, Antoine Sullivan, Tim Greer. All three of those guys, excuse me, it was Antoine Sullivan who averaged 14.5 yards per catch. I apologize, at San Diego Mesa.
It's okay.
But, you know, you have that trio in, and then you also have, you know, players with Power 5 experience like Jalen Gill, who, if memory serves, he went for, you know, he had 80 catches for over 1,000 yards in three seasons at Boston College. Michael Barkley had a lot of playing time for Toledo last year. He had 22 catches for the Rockets. So they have a number of options at their disposal. And it wouldn't shock me if when all was said and done, that, you know, at least one guy from each of these three sort of disparate groups ended up being sort of that core group that steps up and ends up with the most production. But, you know, when we did the voting for the preseason freshman year, I was kind of surprised that Moss ended up being a collective favorite. But, you know, the more I've looked into him, the more video I've seen, the more I've heard about him from both spring and fall camp.
Pretty good.
You know, if you're looking for a breakout candidate on this roster, or at least among this this part of the roster, he might be it. I'm starting to come around on it.
That's what they need. They need somebody to step in and step out right away. So if it's him, that's better for them. But it's going to be anyone's game who could step up and play, because there's, like you mentioned, a couple guys coming back, but the key players are gone, and they're gonna have opportunities for somebody to make a name for themselves. And this offense, mm-hmm. what we know from Tedford, if you're the number receiver, number running back, you're gonna be in contention for an all Mountain West position too.
Yeah.
So what about the offensive line? Because I did find they are returning 48% of their offensive production from last year, 112th in the country.
Yeah, they do have seven different players back who had at least one start last year. And I think for the most part, if you look at the numbers, they were mostly fine. Like they weren't like an active negative in the same way that like some other offensive lines were. Yeah. But I don't know that we would necessarily call them elite. And, you know, the way that I sort of think about that is I look at the time that Jay Kanard had to drop back to throw. And I'm trying to find, now I can't find the numbers. I apologize. But I remember that it was not necessarily like all that much time that he had, you know, relative to other quarterbacks in the conference. And so I do think that that is something that the offensive line will need to improve upon. You know, if you're looking for a sort of a shorthand for what I'm talking about, just keep in mind that despite the fact that they gave up a stuff rate of 14.4%, that was 23rd in the country. They were also above average in terms of opening running lanes for their running backs, 50.9% opportunity rate, which was 38th in the country. But they also allowed a sack rate of 7.1%. And that was a little bit below average, 84th overall among FBS teams. So there is definitely room for improvement, even despite the fact that they are bringing back so much experience. You know, they do have to replace their starting center, Bula Schmidt, who transferred to UCF. There was talk in the spring that Jacob Spomer, who spent all of last year at left tackle, might make that switch. But I think if you're looking for reassurance as a member of the Red Wave, again, I think it mostly comes down to the fact that they do have a ton of experience coming back. Because Mosey Abau is back. I know he got some all-conference consideration last year. Jacob Isaiah is back. Tyron Sampson's back. Osmar Velez is back. That's four guards right there that had at least 200 snaps last year. That's a pretty good start. And I think the main turnover is, you know, finding at least one new starter at tackle, like especially if Spomer ends up moving inside. But, you know, Braylon Nelson is back, and they did bring in a couple of interesting transfers through the portal. And they brought in Cameron McCard from Oregon State, Kingsley Ugwu from Kansas State. So again, I think that they feel pretty good about it overall. And I think if you're a Fresno State fan, you can expect this unit to be a little bit better just in terms of continuity.
And that'll help because look at the other new positions, new quarterback, new running back, new receiver, newish quarterback, depending who's out there. And it all starts there. It's like, it's simply a block. You're good. Help everything else out. But if I'm going to pick an area that I want the more experience, that's probably where we want it to be. Cause we've mentioned a million times, like, how good is the Air Force offensive line when they're all healthy out there. And then we've seen Boise State the past couple of years where they do 6 lineups in 9 games and it doesn't go well. So having the experience there will just make everybody's job that much easier. And this is a good thing to have. Like, yeah, replacing Nick Remigio, Jordan Mims, J.K. Inner, it's a lot of guys to replace skill position. But I have your offensive line where multiple players who started at least one game last year plus transfers coming in who've had experience or at least a minimum practice experience and maybe against some a little bit better competition, but depending where they come from. I'll take it for this team. That's a good place to start. If I want my experience back, that's a good spot to have it with replacing everything else. So potential Mountain West guys on here. And so I think they'll be good. I think it'll be in the unit that'll help set the tone for the offense.
So what about the defense?
Well, as we know, Jeff Tefford's not a defensive coach, but that's okay. We can forgive him for that, right? Because he just outscored all the points. But actually, it's really good. Jokes aside, defense is really good. And it could be, do we dare maybe possibly, despite losing players in the portal, better than last year?
It could be special. If they can hold on to the gains that they've made as the season progressed last year. Because there's little doubt that they really got pushed by some of the stronger opponents that they faced, especially early in the season.
USC, if you look Boise at the three, State, yeah, tough.
Yeah, if you look at the three games they played against Oregon State, USC, and Boise State between the beginning of the season in October, those were the three games that they gave up over 6 yards per play. So it wasn't great against strong offenses. And you do have to couch it a little bit. You have to acknowledge a little bit of context that the quality of competition definitely lightened up in the second half of the year. If you sort of look at it week from week, starting with the New Mexico game in mid-October, they got pushed the week after that against San Diego State. They gave up over 7 yards per play. But then, in the second half of the year, they got to face Hawaii, they got to face Nevada, they got to face Wyoming. But then to their credit, stiffened up considerably on the road against the Broncos in the championship game. And then did what you would expect them to do against a limited Washington State team in the bowl game. So when you look at that 4.6 yards per play that they allowed in the last 6 games of the year, that's an exceedingly high bar to clear. But this is still a defense that on the season finished in the top 50 by both stop rate and sack rate allowed. And I think that even if they regress a little bit, it's still a defense that could be very good. But I think if you're looking for one pressing question that is going to have to get figured out one way or another, they have to figure out what the pass rush is going to look like without David Perales. That's going to be critical.
Legit. One of the best players in the conference. Very, very good. So, yeah, they had got to come from somewhere because he had 11.5 sacks out of the 30 last year. Could it be Johnny Hudson, who's a gigantic 300-pounder? Devo Bridges.
I was, you know what? And he was sort of someone I had my eye on last year. I can't remember if I mentioned him explicitly on the podcast, but I do think you're right. He's part of an interior trio that got plenty of experience last year between he and Devo Bridges, who I was going to add is the only player coming back from last year's defense who had more than two sacks. But, between that duo plus Gabriel Lightfoot, who before he got banged up was starting games as a true freshman, which really says something. That trio, I think, will be able to hold down the interior. So then the question becomes, well, Perales was an ace edge rusher. Who's going to step up to replace him on the outside? And again, I do think that they have some options. Isaiah Johnson, for instance, has been in this program for ages now. I know. 5 career sacks, but 42 career games. That's all I'm saying. He's been around for a while. He stepped away for a while, came back, played all of last year as a redshirt senior. So he's an option. He's had moments in the past, but to me, I think it's the newer names, especially the guys who've come into the program through the transfer portal that are going to be extremely critical, I think, in leading this charge. And I'm thinking particularly about guys like Ezra Christensen, who had 7 sacks last year at San Diego Mesa College in the JUCO ranks, or a guy like Kamari Munier-Bailey, who came in from Idaho, put up a PFF grade of 80.4, and led Idaho with 5 sacks and 8 TFLs, despite playing fewer than 300 snaps altogether.
Yeah, I think we're going to be nitpicking the defense here because it'll be multiple guys to take over for Prowess and the edge rushers. Mm-hmm. Because linebackers should be legit. They bring back like Le'Veon Bell, the leading tackler last year, with 88 tackles. Malachi Langley is really good, does pretty much everything you want to ask for a linebacker. So I don't think replacing Prowess, like they want the threats of that position, but maybe the production comes from a few different places this year. Maybe that could be a legit possibility because they're replacing an all-timer. And well, maybe like we mentioned, Hudson will be the guy, the giant guy at the tackle, who'll just kind of eat up space and push people around. Like Vince Wolfork used to do in NFL forever, a giant dude who would just push people around and help everybody else be bigger and better and make plays.
And linebacker, if everybody stays healthy, linebacker could also be pretty deep as well. Because I know they were counting upon Raymond Scott for a little more than they ended up getting from him last year. Only played in 4 games because he got banged up. But if he can stay healthy, that's only going to make this unit a little bit better. And then here too, you got young guys like Phoenix Jackson, Tyler Mello, who could feasibly step up and get onto the field when either Bailey or Langley need a breather. They also brought in Tua Sivinomura from USC. So they've got, I think, a number of options here too that they feel pretty confident can step in and make a difference in terms of like, being able to step up and defend the run, but also make a play here or there in the passing game.
That's what they'll need. Like, we look at who they're playing, like, not to get too close to schedule, Purdue replaces a quarterback, but they pass a lot. East Washington moves ball, scores points. ASU should have the same thing. They got Utah State, Boise State, San Jose State. You know what I mean? Like, there's some areas where they're going to be challenged. Wyoming, Nevada, not as much. Kent State, we'll see. But there's enough where they're going to be tested.
And I was going to say, to that point, I do want to mention that, both Bailey and Langley in particular were pretty active in that regard. Like one thing that this team did very well last year, they had 78 pass breakups as a defense, which was far and away number one in the conference. Like it was not close. I believe the number two team had like 54.
Yeah.
And both Bailey and Langley were a pretty substantial part of that. Like Langley had 2 interceptions, Bailey had 7 pass breakups. So, in addition to the 8 combined TFLs that duo had, that's a tandem in the middle of your defense that can do a little bit of everything. That's not easy to come by.
No, it's not. And again, that could be their best position of the year. So, they have the depth there, and
I mean, I don't know if I would agree.
Well, that's only because Campbell Walker is back.
Secondary. The secondary could be awesome.
It's all going to be awesome. Like Campbell Lockridge somehow left off the preseason all conference lists for a player of the year.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Like when we did our staff vote for the all conference teams, Lockridge was my defensive player of the year pick. 9 pass breakups last year, 3 tackles for loss, 5 interceptions. Mm-hmm. He was as good as advertised coming over from Hawaii.
He was. Wasn't he my dark horse conference, some sort of MVP or something at some point last year? And
I mean, probably, yeah.
Snickered at me at some point. I forget.
I mean, like let's put it this way: like when you look at his target share that he faced last year, he was 56 targets, which was number one on the team, but he only allowed 23 receptions. It's 41%.
Yeah.
So like he was very adept at getting hands on the football, and that's, and he, granted, he wasn't the only one in this unit that was able to do that. Like just about everybody proved able to get their hands on the football. Like Maurice Norris, for example, who stepped up in that nickelback position, 6 pass breakups, 8 tackles for loss among 57 total tackles. And then if you're looking for like someone who might break out and have an all-conference season himself, keep an eye on Carlton Johnson. Only 7 games last year. They did rack up 6 TFLs and 6 pass breakups in that time. And with Braylon Lux and Kale Sanders Jr. both going through the transfer portal, I have to expect that he is probably going to be a guy lined up opposite Lockridge. That duo could be pretty easily the best cornerback duo anywhere in the conference if everything goes their way and they play up to their potential.
Yeah, this defense, it's going to be, I think it's going to be the best defense in the conference. It's going to be,
I think if there's, I was going to say, if there's one potential question, they do have quite a bit of turnover at safety in particular.
Yeah.
Because, you know, LJ Early is gone. Elijah Gates is gone. Evan Williams transferred to Oregon. So that's like three guys right there that made up most of the snaps that this position had last year. But even here, you know, they do have at least a couple of veterans back, Stephen Comstock, Krishan Gordon, you know, both of whom have plenty of experience. And they also brought in like someone like Dean Clark, who was a former team captain at Kent State, 34 career games there, you know, was part of a winning program out there in the MAC. So I think I would call that maybe more of a yellow flag than anything.
Yeah. Whatever, here's thing, with everything else they have going on, if it's a possible issue, it could be covered up quite easily.
Yeah, I was gonna say, all things considered, it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, defense could be legit, and so we'll see what happens. So, what about special teams? What do they have coming back for that area?
Well, I think the major question is, you know, what's going to happen with the return game? You know, now that Mims is gone, but they don't necessarily have one guy, I think, who is likely to take on the mantle between Mims, you know, and Remigio, of course, handled a lot of those duties last year as well.
He's gone as well.
So it's really hard to say, but Sherrod, I think, is at least one leading option who could take on at least some of that role, averaged over almost 22 yards per kick return last year. Carson King at punter is fine. I think the major question, too, is what's going to happen with the kicker position? Because both Abraham Montano and Dylan Lynch are both back. And at least one of those guys, Montano, caused a little bit of angst with I hesitate to say relatively easy misses because college kicking is not easy to do. But, you know, from within 30 yards last year, he missed, if my math is correct, four different kicks. And was only one of four from 40 or beyond. And he had a long of 43. And so it's tempting to think that, you know, Dylan Lynch might be the better option, especially since he was 6 of 7 in the time where he had the starting role very briefly. But he only had one attempt of over 40 yards. So we don't necessarily know which of them necessarily has the longer range on their kicks. And so if there's uncertainty at the position, it could make the Bulldogs feel more inclined to push the envelope and keep the offense on the field on critical fourth down situations.
It could be. I got one stat for you from last year. Punt return average. Okay. Fresno State averaged 19.92 yards per punt return. Opponents only 7.75. Who knows if they'll be.
I'm going to say that's skewed a little bit, though, because of that magic punt return that Remigio had against UConn.
I don't care. It counts. It all counts.
Okay. No, I get what you're saying. I won't argue that.
But that's a 12-yard difference, and so that's combination of everything. But then again, they're changing the returner for the past couple of years, and so I just saw that stat here over it with CFN. I'm like, oh, that's a good one to bring up. So that was a 12-yard swing. That's huge.
Yeah.
So obviously that replicate. Who knows? But that's just something I noted. I was pointing out to me right here, so I thought I'd bring it up.
Is it schedule time?
Yes, it is schedule time. It's my favorite part of the show, making picks and being
hopefully
right. You mentioned a non-conference schedule. It's not easy. At Purdue.
It's not the most difficult schedule out there this year.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
It's manageable, I think.
Yep. Yeah, they go to Purdue. They host Eastern Washington, who we discussed before, who will be a challenging game. At Arizona State, who's still kind of rebuilding with Kenny Dillingham there. And then Kent State at home, and Max going to Kent State is usually solid. So let's start with Purdue. It's on the road, early kickoff. The biggest thing about Purdue, they lose a starting quarterback from last year. who is now with the Las Vegas Raiders, and Aiden O'Connell.
They lost a lot, though.
Well, I know. I'm just starting at the quarterback position. Okay. And he was fine. Like 22 TDs, 13 INTs. He was good, not great. They losing a lot of. That's why I'm leaning toward Fresno on this one, because they lose the starting quarterback. They do return Devin Mockabee at running back, which is pretty good. Had about 1,000 yards last year. So they do at least bring him back. But what else do they lose, Matt? What else is a concern for Purdue, the Boilermakers?
Well, I believe Purdue had 5 different NFL draft picks last year. You mentioned Aiden O'Connell, the quarterback, is gone. They're also losing their top two pass catchers, wide receiver Charlie Jones, tight end Payne Durham. Both of those guys are gone. And oh, by the way, their head coach from last year, Jeff Brohm, now at Louisville.
Louisville.
So they are starting a new chapter of more ways than one, but they are still an interesting team because they replaced Brohm with Ryan Walters. And if the name doesn't sound familiar to you, you may recall last year's Wyoming-Illinois game, the season opener that those two teams played.
Soccer.
Last year, Walters was the defensive coordinator under Brett Bielema at Illinois. And they were awesome in his two-year tenure there. You know, last two seasons by Defensive SP Plus, 19th and 3rd overall in the country on that side of the ball. And you know, when you mentioned Mockabee, they do have him returning. They also brought in Hudson Card, who's generally considered one of the top transfer quarterbacks in this year's portal. Former 4-star recruit for Texas.
Texas, that's what only I was thinking made, of Texas.
Yeah, only made 5 starts, but he did appear in 22 games over 3 years. Even though he never quite held on to the starting job for all that long against Casey Thompson and Quinn Ewers and guys like that. But for his career, in roughly 200 career attempts, 65% completion rate, 11 touchdowns, 1% INT rate. So, like, he's got some talent. And they do have, you know, a couple of nice pieces on defense as well. The one guy that they're very high on that I think is worth keeping an eye on is Nick Scowerton. You know, was, I believe, a freshman last year, sophomore now. Limited playing time, but he did have 11 stops, according to Pro Football Focus, on about 250 snaps. But I do think overall that the Boilermakers do have like a ton to replace. So I do think it'll definitely be a competitive game between these two teams. But on paper, I like Fresno State to win this game on the road and start 1-0.
I do as well because, yeah, they bring Hudson Card's experience, but losing all those top guys and going up against a good defense. That's why I see FPI 78% for Purdue. That seems ridiculously
interesting.
Ridiculous out of line. I know Fresno loses a ton as well on the other side of the ball, so there's a concern there. But I think trust in Tedford, consistency coaching staff, defense, that'll be legit. If Fresno State's offense takes a step back and scores 24 points, they can win this game 24-17.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to Fresno State for the first victory of the year. Then they come back home and take on Eastern Washington, is it their official nickname, the Eagles, right?
That's correct.
They're not put in the blood field, but what's the FCS minute we have for this amazing football team up in the Pacific Northwest?
So we mentioned them a little bit earlier with reference to Pat McCann, their former offensive coordinator. Eagles fell on hard times last year, actually. Only finished 3-8, which was the program's first losing season. Do you want to take a guess? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Since 1994.
Not quite. But it was their first losing season since 2006.
Okay. I just went way back, so.
And, you know, a lot of the problems with last year's team, which I think is going to be a challenge for them to try to fix this year, is the fact that they gave up way too much ground on defense. You know, among all FCS teams, they gave up 6.92 yards per play. That was the second most of any team on that level. And they also have to replace, you know, some of their top defensive players on that side of the ball, including like Mitchell Johnson. So they only have a couple of players returning on that side of the ball, Matthew Brown and Brock Harrison, who had more than 2 sacks. So it's a similar kind of challenge that we talked about with the Bulldogs themselves. And they're also sort of breaking in a new quarterback as well. That is, I would say, relatively unproven in Kikoa Visperis. He does have some nice pieces at his disposal. You know, Efton Chisholm, their top target, was an all-conference member last year. He had over 1,000 all-purpose yards. He's back. Their tight end Blake Goble is back. So they might be a decent candidate to bounce back and be reasonably competitive in the Big Sky this fall. But again, Fresno State should not lose this game. I've got them winning it.
They should win too. Also, I was just checking the preseason poll. Eastern Washington, nowhere to be seen. Not even receiving votes. So they're not what they've been the past couple years or even the past while. So 2-0. And then they take on Arizona State on the road. Kenny Dillingham, the head coach there. Arizona State, they're in a weird spot, kind of, just because of Herm Edwards gone recently and all their recruiting stuff. Did you hear what their AD said the other day about being in the Big 12 now?
About how he's not going to West Virginia?
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to send my deputy AD to go out the rest of Oregon town.
That's a shame. I hear it's nice out there.
I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you're not better than that. Arizona State, I think they're still going to where did they finish in the Pac-12? I'm trying to think preseason.
They were 3-9 last year.
Yeah, they weren't good last year. I was trying to think of something else real quick. I don't recall what it was. I was trying to – yeah, they weren't good. They might actually be – here's what we're thinking. Like, I think Arizona's going to be better than them this year. The only team I think worse than in the whole Pac-12 might be Colorado. If Cal, Stanford, and Colorado are going to be pretty bad. I think they're sitting in that 8-9 spot in the conference. And, well, I think they have some potential with the quarterbacks coming in because they might have the who is the guy supposed to go? He was supposed to go to Florida.
Are you talking about Jaden Rashada?
Jaden Rashada. I was thinking DeLore. I'm not sure. So like he potentially could be in the mix to do some things there, but I still think they're a year away from being to what they think they should be. Just because staff turnover. They were just bad last year.
Just at quarterback, they've got like four dudes who could reasonably win the job.
Yeah, that's not good at this point when we're 2 weeks away.
Because it hasn't received quite the same amount of buzz as Colorado's turnover has. But Arizona has turned over a lot on both sides of the ball. Like just at quarterback, for example, they brought in Drew Pine, transferred from Notre Dame. They had their holdover from last year, Trenton Bourget, who was the starter for most of the second half of the season. He's back. They also brought in Jacob Conover. And then you mentioned Rashada.
So Jacob Conover, he's not going to – he's a BYU. He's no chance. I know his high school coach is dealing him before. I'm like, no, there's no chance he's starting. If he does, there's big problems.
Take your word on that then. And I will add that they also brought in Cameron Scadabo from Sacramento State. He had over 1,250 yards rushing last year with the Hornets. He's probably going to be their lead back. They've got at least one really good receiver in Elijah Badger, 866 yards and 7 touchdowns last year. He's back. They also have their tight end, Jalen Conyers, 38 catches, 422 yards and 5 touchdowns. And they also brought in Xavier Guillory, Idaho State's top receiver from last year. He averaged 15 yards per catch at the FCS level. And they also brought in some familiar names too. Like, their starting center might be former UNLV player, Leif Beltanu. They also brought in Aaron Frost, who might start at one of their tackle positions from Nevada. So it's a really interesting mix. I think the big question is, what exactly is the defense going to look like? Because, on paper, I believe they're only returning 4 or 5 starters from last year. So while they have a number of transfer portal imports on that side of the ball too, like they brought in Juwan Mitchell from Tennessee, Tristan Monday at Wisconsin, guys like that. There's not a lot of proven entities on that side of the ball. And so it's sort of an open question of whether or not they're going to be able to stop anybody. And if you look at what their numbers were from last year, on defense, it was one of the worst units in the country. Like in terms of points per drive allowed, they were 127th out of 131 teams. And if it's not much better this time around, even on the road, Fresno State should win this game. And I think that they will.
I don't know what to do because I think Fresno State's going to as well. And I don't know what to deal with. It should be noted. Did you mention, I was looking up something about the receiver that Jake Smith got denied his eligibility today or yesterday.
I did not see that.
So it just came out. He's one of the guys, the North Carolina receiver. It's a thing. Oh, you haven't graduated from your third school. So it was apparently earlier today. This is over at ArizonaSports.com that he's denied because it's his third school and has not graduated. So he went to Texas and USC, and so he's expected to be a player to come into play instantly to be a good player for, if I can speak, the wide receiver group. Yeah. So yeah, that's not good either. So I guess I'm going with Fresno to be 3-0, then to take on Kent State in a MAC versus Mountain West matchup the following week at a Bulldog Stadium there.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I'm afraid to keep picking victories, Matt. I don't think this is a good thing for me if I keep having Fresno State win games.
Okay, well, here's the thing about the Golden Flashes. Maybe this will help you feel better.
Did I pick a loss for him? Is that what you're telling me now?
No. Kent State this year is the poster program for teams that got absolutely gutted by the transfer portal.
That's how the MAC teams usually are.
Well, no, I mean it's rough. Like, do you know how much returning production they have coming back this year?
No, but I do know they lost their head coach to be the OC at Colorado. Sean Lewis.
That's true. Sean Lewis is gone. They replaced him with Kenny Burns, who I believe was the running backs coach at Minnesota or Indiana. Yeah. No.
No, he's with PJ Fleck.
That's right. But the Flashes are returning just 29% of last year's production.
Oh, that's worse than Fresno State.
Their quarterback transferred to UCLA from last year.
Couple off on
their top. Their top receiver transferred to Penn State. Like they have lost so much to just graduations and everything else, and there aren't a lot of proven entities ready to replace them. Like they're replacing their top three rushers, their starting quarterback, their top three receivers, their top three tacklers. Like if you're looking for some names to keep an eye on, like CJ West is a longtime sort of sturdy veteran on the interior of that defensive line. Last year, he had 4.5 tackles for loss and 26 total tackles in 10 starts. But around him, it's sort of an open question of just like who's going to do what, because there's so many youngsters that could potentially step up into key positions. A quarterback position, for example, could be a competition between like, you know, redshirt freshman like Tommy Ulatowski versus someone like a Michigan transfer, Michael Alamo. Devin Cardman, sophomore, is back on the roster. Honestly, like given the hits that Kent State has taken, we mentioned Dean Clark earlier. He was another one of those transfers out.
And their quarterback.
This is UCLA. Again, Fresno State should win this game, and they should win this game going away.
So let me ask you a quick question: Fresno State got a few votes in the coaches' poll the other day. If they start 4-0, will they be ranked before or after the Arizona? Will they be ranked after non-conference play, or can they be ranked after they beat Arizona State at 3-0?
I think knowing the mindset of the average voter, it's going to take a little while for them to be ranked. But I don't think that the average voter is correct about that.
Should Fresno State be ranked right now?
I think they should merit more consideration than they have received at large. I believe they were 36th overall in the coaches' poll, right?
They got like 19. Them and Boise State were right by.
It's like also receiving votes. They should have been closer to the top 25. That's what I'm saying overall.
That's why I think people were scared off by the offensive production gone. Then we get to league play. So here's their home slate: Nevada, UNLV, Boise State, New Mexico. Pretty very manageable. Boise State clearly the toughest of that group. And then road slate at Wyoming, at Utah State, back to back. At San Jose State, at San Diego State. So the road slate's very difficult, very difficult. So is it just say that we'll talk Nevada next week because our next show, they're our final preview. But I don't think they'll have any issue with Nevada at home. There's Nevada still working about a quarterback. They lost your favorite player ever, Matt and Dom Peterson. He's gone. There's an experienced running back in that Toa Talis. That is a lot, and Ken Wilson's still trying to do his thing there. But I don't think Nevada can do much of anything in resistance or pushing around the defense. It's supposed to be legit when Wolfpack are still like, who's our quarterback? Ehlinger? Who do we got back there? I don't know. Nate Cox is gone, right? But Carson Strong's been gone for a minute. Nobody's walking through the door from years ago. But I think it'll be a quite easy victory for Fresno State.
Yeah, I would agree.
So what about this next stretch, the Wyoming at Utah State? Wyoming, I predicted them 7-5. I'm not super happy about it, but part of it was their stretch of schedule that Wyoming has. That's why a couple losses come in a pretty tough non-conference slate. This is going to be – I like the Purdue game just because it's a Big Ten team, but this is the first game I'm like, this will really test what Fresno State can be. Because Defensively, they'll be fine. I don't expect a ton out of Wyoming's offense because nobody really does until they prove it to me besides their running game. Quarterback is experienced there, obviously, with I'm thinking of Andrew Peasley. I was trying to think of the Utah State guy. Sorry, Peasley's a QB there. Right? Wait, am I mixing them up? Wait, is that correct? No.
Andrew Peasley at Wyoming, yeah.
Sorry, I was thinking of the guy who went to Utah State from Wyoming. No, I was like, wait, I second-guessing myself. Like, wait,
you're thinking of Levi Williams.
Yeah, for some reason, I'm like, wait a second. And that little thought, like, no. But they do have experience QB clearly. We talked about that, I think, above like 60%. But this game, I'm wondering, at this point, we should know what the Fresno offense is, if it's Keene, if it's the running backs a committee, and what, if new, like, Jalen Moss is going to step up wide receiver to be that guy. I predict a win, but it's going to be a very difficult victory if they're going to get it done. Top three toughest games on the year. Could be their most difficult non-conference game because it's on the road. Or conference game, excuse me.
In my opinion, Wyoming is the answer to the question, which defenses are most likely to stop this Fresno State offense this year?
This is the first one on the list, right?
Because the one thing I think about is that Cowboys pass rush, which I am personally very high on. And I think, you know, they are both deep and dangerous. And if Fresno State's offensive line can't improve from last year, it could look like a lot of those, you know, early season games where, like, even if the Cowboys offense is like stuck in neutral or whatever the case might be, the Cowboys are good enough on that side of the ball, I think, or they could be good enough to win like a 14-13 game. Or you know, to steal a game at home in the similar kind of way that they did against Air Force last year, where nobody expected them to win that game. I think a lot of people, you and I included, expected the Falcons to go in there and win relatively comfortably.
Yeah.
And so I do think it may take a C-minus performance on the offensive side of the ball for Wyoming to be able to steal that one at home. And I worry about Fresno State's ability to hold up against the pass rush, even despite the experience they have coming back, which is why if you listened to our Wyoming podcast, you already know that I penciled this one down as Bulldogs loss.
I have a win. I have Fresno State 6-0 at this point. People are like me, but I'm like, what am I doing here? They play Utah State next week on the road. Utah State's we talked about our other preview. Besides having a good quarterback, they have Ike Larson, great secondary, which that could be kind of a big difference for with him back there going up against the receiving group. That's at this point, they're all played a handful of games are good, but it'll be one of the first times outside of Wyoming where they probably line up against a really good guy in secondary that caliber. They've experienced QB, obviously Cooper Legault, but they replaced running backs. They replaced, I say it every week when they play Utah State, half the team went to BYU or the Big 12. So, and Blake Anderson, again, I don't think he'll be around next year, regardless if he does good or not good. But I know it's on the road, but I just don't see Utah State being able to have enough pieces to keep up with Fresno State, especially the offense. Like, it was so hard. It's hard to relate last year because we saw them play Alabama, get their butt kicked, obviously. Weber State was a surprise. But that second half was they turned it around quite well. And so there is stuff that Utah State could show, but I think Fresno is more capable defensively to slow down what Utah State can throw at them.
Honestly, though, I do think that the season is going to be made or broken on the two-game homestand that follows that. At home against UNLV, at home against Boise State.
I know you like UNLV, but they're going to beat UNLV.
You say that.
I do. But
you forget that the last two years, they've been one-score results, and UNLV has held late leads in both of those games.
Yeah, but who won?
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying that they have played the Bulldogs particularly tough over the last couple of years. And I will note too that, like, you know, despite the fact that the Bulldogs have had recent success on the blue, they haven't played particularly well at home against Boise State over the last couple of seasons either. Like last year at home, they got blown out by 20. And granted, some of that had to do with the fact that they were playing without Jake Haener. You know, so you have to keep that in mind. But at the same time, you know, they were, I'm trying to remember what it was. Was it like 2 years ago that they played at home as well?
The back-to-back with COVID year, maybe?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Last year, they played on the road in the regular season and in the championship game at Boise. But two years ago, they lost that 40-14 game where, you know, the team was nationally ranked and they just could not put it together. And Boise State's obviously a very dangerous team in their own right. You know, plenty of talent on the offensive side of the ball with Taylen Green, Ashton Jeanty, and George Helani. Yeah, I think the calculus changes a little bit now that they lost Latrell Caples for the season as we're recording this on August 10th. But I like Fresno State's defense at this juncture just a little bit more, which is why I have that game penciled as a win as well. I think both teams are likely to play them tough. I do think Fresno State will come out on both in the end.
I have it as a loss this game. It's at home, which I get, but because here's the thing, this last stretch, the Boise at San Jose, New Mexico at San Diego State, it's pretty difficult. But I think at some point I might like Boise's offense a bit more to get a few more things done to break through. But I don't think it'll be like the past couple years where it's a blowout. It's going to be close regardless. But I just have a lean toward Boise State on this one with maybe it's right or wrong, but think about it. They got two good running backs, Jeanty and Helani, quarterback set up. They need to find the receivers, like the depth-wise or standout talent. I think they have a little bit too much on offense, even though I don't think it'll be a high-scoring game. It might be something 28-20, something like that, kind of close-ish, maybe 30 if you're lucky. Both defenses will be really good. But I just kind of maybe trust it Boise offense a little bit more because what they have coming back. And what about their final two road games? Because we both have them winning New Mexico, right? Beating the Lobos at home?
Yes.
So what about, because these road games are tough, going to Northern California, Southern California, San Jose State, San Diego State. I think we're going to beat both of them. I do, but those are still very not easy games, right? They're not going to walk in and beat San Jose State just because.
No, but I think the difference between this year's San Jose State team and last year's San Jose State team is that, you know, they managed to put the brakes on Siobhan Cordero and company last year. And this year, Spartans also don't have Viliami Fajoko and Cade Hall.
It's true. Those are those key defenders.
San Diego State, I'm not quite sure what to make of the offense. I do think it'll be better, but I think it is likely to be erratic in the same way that it was, even as Jalen Maiden took over that quarterback role in the second half of last year. That, I think, is likely to make the difference in that particular game.
Yeah, it'll be end of the year, so we know what they have. But, like, again, going into the year, the top couple of receivers are gone. Running back has been inconsistent and not, or at least not up to Aztec standard for a couple of years. Defense will be fine. But I got to win as well. It'll be tough. And if Maiden is as good as I think he could be one of the surprise quarterbacks. I wonder what talent is around him and what Ryan Lindley will allow him to do. Or maybe it's what Brady Hoke will allow Ryan Lindley to do to allow Jalen Maiden to be successful in this offense. I think that'll come a lot down San Diego State if they open up just a little bit. That might be a key for them to be better, but I don't think they can beat Fresno State. The oil can's going to stay up in Central California.
Mm-hmm.
I have them 7-1 conference play, 11-1 overall.
What was the one loss again?
Boise State at home.
I have them 11-1 as well, 7-1 in conference with the lone loss on the road at Wyoming.
Oh my goodness. I don't feel good about it, but I think they can do it. Like, I'm not confident in them, but it just seems going through game by game, I'm like, oh yeah, they got this.
If they were playing Boise State's schedule or if they were playing Wyoming's schedule, I think they'd be a lot closer to an 8 or 9 win team.
Oh yeah. Because Wyoming, I think they got
their pair of Power Five opponents at like just the right level.
Yeah,
where I do think that there's the potential for both Purdue and Arizona State to be adequate.
If you had to pick one of those two, which is the most likely loss?
Purdue.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think Purdue. It's travel wise, it's a bit different team, but like,
to say that they won't be tested. I do think that. Mm-hmm. You know, even if, you know, past Wyoming, you know, UNLV is going to be a tough test, I think, because I'm bullish on the Rebels and their chances to improve this year. Boise State, yeah, always a challenge, obviously. And rivalry games against San Jose State and San Diego State, you kind of throw the numbers out to some extent when those teams play, just because you never know what it's quite going to be.
Yeah, and they're both probably going to be bowl teams, those two matchups that are on the road. So there's a chance where If things go a little bit down, they could be 8-4, which is still pretty good. Like, I could legit see them losing to Purdue, possibly. Maybe Arizona State, not really. I could see them losing.
Allow me a rare hot take on this podcast?
Oh, you have the floor as much as you need. Go for it. I'll turn my mic off so you can just go for it. What do you got?
I believe that by year's end, this is going to be a top 25 team.
Oh, that's not a hot take. That's a reasonable take. I think I say like top 15 or something.
I believe that they will also be in the conversation for the FBS to bowl this year.
There we go. That's what I like to hear. Them and Tulane, right? Is that what they're battling probably?
I don't know. I don't think Tulane is going to be quite as good as everybody else thinks they are.
We'll see.
I think I think that, you know, because I am a believer in like the advanced metrics and things like that. Mm-hmm. But just based on what I've seen with my own eyes over the past 5 or 6 years, especially with Tedford at the helm, I think to a certain extent you look past all of that and you recognize that this is a coaching staff that knows how to identify talent and develop it.
Agreed.
And so, yeah, they're replacing their quarterback. They're replacing their top running back. Yeah, they're replacing a legion of wide receivers. But we've seen them figure this out before. We have seen them start from one of the lowest possible holes that you could possibly imagine. And they are bringing in better talent at this junction than they did back when they did it the first time around 6 years ago. If I'm a Bulldogs fan, I am buying into this team.
I will say this, if they're 11-1, they're going to be the representative for the Group of Five for New Year's Six game.
At a minimum, they're going to be hosting the Mountain West Championship game on December 4th or whatever that Saturday is.
Against a team we probably know if you listen closely, but we'll discuss that at a later date.
Yeah.
So, anything else to add about your Fresno State Bulldogs, Matt? Are we good to go to wrap this bad boy up?
I will drop the proverbial mic after my hot take. I will leave it at that.
Perfect. All right. MWR.com. Wherever you got this podcast, say, hey, give us a couple good stars, at least five, a minimum five, because that's the most you can give. If you like what we're doing, we appreciate it. So we got one more preview coming up, Nevada next show. If you missed any of our other shows where you're like, whoa, I found this Fresno State thing, we have all the other ones up and loaded over at Spotify, Pocket Cast, wherever you get your show podcast. So go check all those out. We will have a giant mega preview down the road, and then we'll be starting previewing and recapping games like in 2 weeks, Matt. It's here.